Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
On May 21, 2011, when the rapture occurs, that's 5 times 10 times 17. Wow, that just fits perfectly.
With camping, it's very hard to get seriously because, to be perfectly blunt, there's a kook element involved.
I don't expect everyone to understand this, but I'm a believer and a follower of Jesus Christ. And that relationship is far more important to me than any political office.
Without these bold men who were not pastors confessing the faith, who knows where we would be today?
I'm Derek, the tea guy from Seward, Nebraska, who drives his truck through Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and I rock Issues Etc. the whole way.
Most of us every day deal with the scriptures in translation. Most of us have no choice but to deal with Holy Scripture, Old and New Testament, in translation. We needed someone to learn the biblical languages, such as they are, the ancient Hebrew, the Aramaic, the Greek, and then not just one person, but many people to apply their minds, their reason, their skills, and their acumen to translating those ancient languages of Holy Scripture accurately into the language that we speak in, that we write in, that we compose in. For us in the English-speaking world, we deal with the Bible in translation. And English translations have a long and storied history in Holy Scripture. What about a translation done not by a group of scholars, not by committees of scholars, which most translations are done, all the way from the King James up until the English Standard Version? What about a Bible translation, Old and New Testament, done by one man, one scholar, one translator of Scripture, Old and New Testament? We're going to be talking about a Bible translation called the Holy Bible in Translation of Today, often called the Beck Bible, live this Tuesday afternoon, May the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live. A little bit later, as usual, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us. We'll teach a Sunday school lesson on Acts chapter 10, Peter and Cornelius, perhaps one of the better-known stories in the book of Acts. The second hour of the program on this Tuesday afternoon, we're going to spend entirely with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. When was it? Yesterday we played for you an interview that we did on Friday last week with Bart Ehrman, a liberal Bible scholar who's written several books misquoting Jesus and his latest called Forged, wherein he claims that much of the New Testament, all but about six or seven books, are essentially forgeries. They do not have the authors that people think they have or that they claim to have. He's written that book. We interviewed him. You heard the interview yesterday. In the second hour of the program, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will respond to some of what Dr. Bart Ehrman had to say in our interview. That's coming up in the second hour. I invite your questions and your comments for the next 2 hours of the program. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email anytime right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet @issuesetc or leave questions, comments, thoughts, reactions for Dr. John Warwick Montgomery in the second hour of the program at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about a translation of the Bible that was published in 1976 by Dr. William F. Beck, a single translator for both Old and New Testament, often called the AAT or the Beck Bible. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, and author of the Concordia Commentaries on Daniel, Proverbs, and Ezra and Nehemiah. Dr. Steinman, welcome back.
Nice to be back with you, Todd.
What should be the ultimate goal of any translation, English translation, of Holy Scripture?
Well, ultimately, you want to accurately portray the meaning and expressions of the original Greek and Hebrew texts in the language of the reader or hearer, if it happens to be a Bible translation that's going to be read out loud, for instance, as in worship. And that's an easy thing to state, but a very hard thing to do because you have different hearers who have different expectations, and that probably is the reason why we have so many different English Bible translations.
Why have most, not all, but most translations of the Bible been the work of a group of Bible scholars rather than a single or few Bible scholars?
Well, when you have just one or two people working on a Bible translation, every person tends to have their own tendencies and idiosyncrasies, and those can kind of come out in a translation, whether the translator realizes it or not. And oftentimes, having several sets of eyes looking things over tends to smooth out those kind of idiosyncratic things that would go into a translation if it's only done by one person.
Someone might say, well, you Lutherans hardly have reason to object to a single translator version of the Bible, because didn't Luther himself, when he translated Holy Scripture, the New Testament initially, wasn't he a single translator working on his very first translation into the common language?
Well, that is true, but keep in mind that Luther, when he got back to Wittenberg, started working with others, and his New Testament and later on his entire Bible went through several editions in his lifetime where he worked with others and got other people's opinions. So although it started out as, you know, a single person's translation, it didn't really stay there for very long, and Luther was wise enough to consult with others as he worked through this and revised it several times.
So when it comes to the so-called Beck Bible, as I mentioned before, translated and then published in 1976 by Dr. William F. Beck, a Lutheran Bible scholar, let's start with the good. We'll go on to some criticisms a little bit later. What is good about this translation?
Well, his New Testament is generally pretty good. He was a good New Testament scholar, and, you know, every Bible translator sooner or later is going to come across passages where he's forced to make a decision. Do you translate it this way or that way? And one thing that I appreciate about Beck is he was a Lutheran, and he, when he was forced to make a decision, he usually made a decision in favor of the understanding that you would find in the Lutheran confessions, which I think is always a good decision. So from that viewpoint, I think he was fairly good. And another thing that he was pretty good at, especially in the Gospels, was translating parallel passages. You know, you have a lot of stories in the Gospels that are repeated that you'll find in, say, Matthew and Mark, or Mark and Luke, or maybe in a few cases in all four Gospels. And he was usually pretty good about comparing those and making them the same where they were the same whenever that was possible, and showing up little distinctions in words where Matthew or Mark might choose to use different words in Greek. He was fairly good at that in the Gospels. Of course, there's always places where one can criticize here and there in any translation, but overall, he was aware of these parallels and did a fairly good job with them.
Why is it important to note how a translator deals with parallel passages?
Well, it's for one thing, it's a test of his consistency, and another thing, it's a test of his translation skill. Can you work on parallel passages that say pretty much the same thing and yet not, you know, kind of so homogenize them that Matthew begins to sound like Mark or Luke begins to sound like Matthew or something like that, that you can still preserve the distinctiveness in each one of the gospel writers while giving the impression that you're talking about the same story that the other gospel writer is also conveying.
So it's a little bit about as you said, being consistent where there is remarkable similarity, but also being able to express the nuance of the differences in language between accounts that are so very similar.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a high art when it comes down to it, something very difficult for Bible translators to do all the time and to do consistently.
I had one other question while we're on kind of the strengths of this. It seems as though one of the things that any English translator, be it a single person or a group, would want to do is to check their work against existing and trusted English translations. Does the Beck translation appear to have done that fairly well, at least with respect to the New Testament? About 1 minute before we take our break.
I think as far as not so much in wording, but as in far as checking out their tone, you might say, or their general take on how something should be understood, I think he was fairly good at that. Beck, of course, was striving for something in modern American idiom, and so oftentimes he departs from the exact wording. But he does appear to have at times looked at some prior Bible translations, at least to get their kind of feel for the passage.
We're talking about a Bible translation called the Holy Bible in the translation of today, often called the Beck Bible. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, May the 17th, here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, and author of the Concordia Commentaries on Daniel, Proverbs, and Ezra and Nehemiah. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about some of the criticisms that can be leveled at the Beck translation, the ATT translation, with Dr. Andrew Steinman. I do invite your questions and comments. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @IssuesETC.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
This is Pastor Miller of Trinity Lutheran Church in Bay Ridge. We preach, teach, and confess the historic Catholic faith. For a refuge from the pop spirituality and shallow preaching that swirls about in our day, come to our haven at 9020 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. In addition to Mrs. Solano's Sunday School at 9:30, we have liturgy at 11 a.m., followed by a fellowship meal and Bible study after the service. You're invited to come and be a part of Trinity, a biblical and sacramental church. Visit trinitybayridge.org.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri. And Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. IssuesETC.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. We're talking about a Bible translation, usually called the Beck Bible, an American translation. Moving from the positives, let's talk about some of the negatives. You say that because he was not trained in general linguistics, his choices of English words for the Greek, the Hebrew, the Aramaic, was done more by feel, apparently, than by solid linguistic analysis. What do you mean?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the best things that the people at the University of Michigan ever did to me was force me to take general linguistics courses. And to learn generally how language works. And Beck had the right motive, I think, in mind. He wanted to make the Bible accurate and understandable. And so he would try to put this in modern American idiom by what he felt was right, what he just had a sense as a Native American speaker was the right idiom. But he didn't always, I don't think, make the right choice. You have to understand language change over time, for instance. And, you know, Beck, a mature man, might make a choice of words that were would sound maybe a little quaint to younger ears. And he might have wanted to have somebody with more linguistic training to say, you know, this is an idiom that or a phrase that will last, that has endured for a long time and is likely to last into the future rather than something that is a, you know, kind of going out of style at this present time or something like that. And just having an awareness of historical linguistics and how language changes over time and the differences in idioms between generations would have helped him a lot, I think, in some of his phraseology.
You also say that one of the criticisms that can be leveled here is that Dr. Beck did not apparently keep a list of commonly occurring and important words in Greek and Hebrew. For what reason would a translator keep such a list?
Just for consistency's sake, you would want to translate as much as possible words so that a reader could see that, oh, if Paul uses this word in his letter to the Romans and he uses it again in Colossians, you'd want the reader, if possible, to make that connection. Now, you can't always translate the same Greek word or same Hebrew word the same way in each context, but if you kept the list, and you would find that at times you can do that. Another reason for keeping as a list is you want to keep similar words in Greek or Hebrew distinct. You know, so you might have words for miracles or terms for songs or words relating to the occult that occur in the New Testament, and you would want to be able to say, okay, these are distinct terms. I want to have them, say, all in the same area of meaning, but I want them to be distinct for the reader so that the reader can kind of see when the New Testament is using these words and how it's using them differently, and to try to be somewhat consistent. Again, you have to make decisions based on context, and you can't follow a hard and fast rule on any of this, but by keeping such lists, and not just doing it in your head or not just having a few important words that you know you're being consistent on. These things are very important in kind of a Bible translation. And as far as I can tell, Beck didn't do this in a systematic way or in a regular manner.
With regard regarding the Old Testament, that's where most of your deeper concerns lie, beginning with how the translator dealt with difficult passages, and there is no shortage of difficult passages in the Old Testament, just in terms of getting a sensical or accurate translation.
Yeah, Beck, you know, he wasn't trained as an Old Testament scholar, especially was New Testament. And so sometimes when he came across difficult passages, and since he was by himself, basically, in this project, he had to run to other resources, and having worked on Beck's Bible and looked at it, there were times when I'd shake my head and go, where'd he get that from? Why did he translate it that way? And after a while working, and I was working with other people at the time on this, we began to recognize that he would just pull a commentary off a shelf, and the commentary said this is what it means, and he would follow it. And sometimes those were good commentaries, and sometimes they were kind of avant-garde 1960s commentaries. I remember one case, I don't remember where it was, but I think it was in Deuteronomy where he had some translation, and we scratched our heads, and we finally found, oh, this this approach was recommended in the Anchor Bible Commentary, which is a well-known higher critical series. And I think it was an Anchor Bible Commentary on Deuteronomy, if I remember correctly. But, you know, so he wasn't an expert in the Old Testament, and working by himself again, this became a weakness because oftentimes he just didn't know what to do with some of these difficult passages, and they came out in ways that, quite frankly, I don't think a confessional Lutheran would really recommend, not if they were a good Old Testament scholar.
You also, as you expressed before, some commendation for the way he dealt with parallel passages in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, that's a source of concern for you. Why?
Well, because he simply does not seem to be aware of them, or if he's aware of them, he didn't take them into account. To give you a couple examples, probably the easiest one is to go to the end of Second Chronicles and the beginning of Ezra. Now, these passages are word for word the same, the last couple verses in Chronicles and the first couple verses in Ezra, word for word the same, and they're like either on facing pages or all you got to do is flip a page, depending on what edition of the Beck Bible you have. And if you read them, you would say, oh, well, they say pretty much the same thing, but you would never know as a reader that they're word for word the same, and there's no reason they shouldn't be. Another example is if you look at parallel passages between the Book of Kings and the Book of Chronicles. He doesn't seem to realize that Chronicles at times is almost word for word the same as the parallel passage in Kings. And he does some peculiar things. For instance, I believe it's in Kings, when he's talking about the Arameans from the ancient Aramean kingdom, he calls them, I think, Arameans. But when he gets to Chronicles, which I think he did later, he decides nobody knows where the ancient Arameans lived, and so he has to put it in something more modern, and so he calls them the Syrians. It's the same word in Hebrew, and yet he uses two completely different methods between the time he did Kings and the time he did Chronicles. And it's things like that that kind of stick out like a sore thumb if you know the Old Testament fairly well.
What concerns did you discover examining the Beck Bible with regard to messianic passages in the Old Testament?
Well, he knows the well-known messianic passages, you know, Genesis 3, the curse on the serpent, that his head will be crushed, you know, and he leaves that open for a messianic interpretation. The same thing we could say with Psalm 2 or Psalm 22 or Isaiah 7, you know, a virgin will conceive and bear a child. He gets these and translates them so that at least he doesn't cut the reader off from a messianic interpretation. However, Beck seems to not be aware that besides the kind of the well-known messianic passages, especially the ones that are quoted in the New Testament, that there are quite a few other passages in the Old Testament that Christians have understood to be messianic through the ages, and many of those he doesn't translate in a way that leaves the door open to a messianic understanding. And I think this is ironic because many of the supporters of the Beck Bible have touted the Beck Bible as it's better than some of its contemporaries because, you know, it's so messianic in the Old Testament. And that's simply not true when it comes to kind of the lesser-known messianic passages. It's true of these kind of well-known ones, but not of many of the others. And so that's kind of an unfortunate thing. And again, it shows the weakness of a one-person Bible translation. Had he worked with a team of people, and some of that team would have been Old Testament scholars and sensitive to these type of things, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Now, the Old Testament also has some segments and some passages that appear not in Hebrew, but in a closely related but very different language, Aramaic. So how did he deal with that? We got about a minute before we take our next break.
Yeah, it seems that his Aramaic, at least as way I can tell, is not very good. And so in Daniel and Ezra, where you have extended passages in Aramaic, he sometimes tries to put things into natural English, but he misses the mark as to the meaning because he doesn't understand the Aramaic idioms. And in other places, there's Aramaic idioms that could easily be brought over into English, and he doesn't do it because he doesn't recognize what's going on there. So this is another weakness, in especially in Daniel and Ezra, where you have these extended passages in Aramaic.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. When we come back, we'll have a few more questions on the Bible translation called the An American Translation, or the Beck Bible. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, author of the Concordia Commentaries on Daniel, Proverbs, and Ezra and Nehemiah. After our conclusion of our conversation with Dr. Steinman, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us. We'll be in Acts chapter 10 teaching a Sunday school lesson on Peter and Cornelius, Peter having a vision. And then, well, for Peter, the Gentiles are suddenly now included. Jesus needs to make it very clear to him that the Gentiles are now included in the people of God. After that, an hour with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery responding to our interview with Dr. Bart Ehrman yesterday on the topic, Is Much of the New Testament Forgeries? Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will be our guest in the entire second hour of the program. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is a little book. It's only $3.99. It's written by Dr. Joel Heck, but it's a great resource if you're still interested in defending the biblical account of creation. In the beginning, God. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call and order In the Beginning, God by Dr. Joel Heck from Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Did God really create the world in 6 24-hour days? And what difference does it make? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is In the Beginning, God, Creation from God's Perspective. It's written by regular guest Dr. Joel Heck. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase In the Beginning, God by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, In the Beginning, God.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
For years, I've been warning against the dangers of RU46, the chemical abortion drug. The first major study in Australia has confirmed my fears. The results were published in a medical journal called the Australian Family Physician. It looked at several thousand abortions and found a considerably higher number of women needed emergency medical treatment after a chemical abortion compared to the surgical procedure. There was a massive increase in the number of women who were readmitted to the hospital for post-abortion medical care. The study found a much higher risk of severe bleeding and infection among women who opted for chemical abortions. I believe this research means many American women are being seriously harmed or possibly even killed, but it's just not reported.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. A few more minutes talking about An American Translation, the Beck Bible with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Then we'll teach a Sunday school lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen on Acts chapter 10, Peter and Cornelius. So it sounds like, in summary, Dr. Steinman, the New Testament of the Beck Bible is far stronger than the Old Testament. What are your overall concerns about both Old and New Testament with regard to this?
Well, I guess one of my concerns is that that sometimes Beck chooses idioms that aren't the best, that were perhaps is intended to be in modern English, but it not necessarily modern English of today. It was kind of outmoded sometimes in his day with certain phrases. Secondly, that because he doesn't understand sometimes the Old Testament well, even in the New Testament, where the New Testament quotes the Old Testament, you have a few issues. But certainly, my biggest concerns are that the Old Testament simply isn't translated very consistently, and the messianic passages that are less obvious to the casual reader aren't as likely to be read messianically because he didn't understand to do that. And, of course, when you rob the Old Testament of Christ, you rob it of its main message.
With regard to the final English product here, it sounds as though, generally speaking here, for the translator from the originals into English, you're trying to render it in English that your reader today will understand, but you can't fix it for just today. You have to have some way, and this must be, as you said, more art than skill, to put it in an English that can endure for generations.
Yeah, and you have to be able to think in terms of English that appears to be durable, that from the best of your knowledge is going to still mean something 20 or 30 years later. This was, you know, one of the great things of the Old King James Version is that it shaped the idiom of the English language, and so it therefore did endure as understandable for quite a long time before it, you know, really needed major overhauls. But I'm afraid that Beck probably didn't do that, and some of his idioms now are sounding rather quaint. You know, here we are 50 years later or something, and I suspect in another 50 years his idioms are going to go from quaint to misunderstood.
Finally, then, if someone is going to use the Beck Bible in American translation, what disclaimer, having examined it in some detail, what disclaimer would you put on it?
Well, I'd tell a person that this is probably going to be an easier read than some translations of the Bible, and in some cases that's going to be good, but also that you shouldn't kind of try to do a very deep Bible study with it because it simply is not designed for that. I don't think that's ever anything that Beck really thought about. And therefore, you know, it's something all right for kind of casual reading to get the major meaning out of, but certainly it's not the type of English Bible translation you want to use when you're trying to delve into details of the text, especially, I would say, in the Old Testament.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago. He's author of the Concordia Commentaries on Daniel, Proverbs, and Ezra and Nehemiah. You can find out more about each of these commentaries under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Steinman, thank you as usual.
Thank you, Todd.